You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. With the U.S. election ticking closer, Screenfish turns back the clock 25 years to rewatch Rob Reiner's The American President. When President Andrew Shepard, played by Michael Douglas, meets impetuous lobbyist Sidney Ellen Wade, played by Annette Bening, he is instantly taken with her. However, their budding romance sparks questions about his character and his ability to lead the country in ways that threaten his re-election campaign. This week, we welcome back Screenfishers Shelley McVie and Heather Johnson to talk about what we expect from our leaders, the nature of character, and whether or not that matters more than policy. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Show. I think he was only on it for eight or I think he was only on it for nine. But it was a 10-year show.
And that I have yet to see a single episode
of West Wing. Oh,
it's almost... like to turn in my TV movie card person.
No. After Trump, I was watching it after it was on, and once the election happened, I had to stop watching it. It's too painful to watch now.
I heard a lot of people say some similar things.
Yeah, it truly is.
Or it's they were just so happy to like go back to it and escape from what it is.
Yes.
So that was 1999 to 2006. Yeah. I have a second computer, so I'm just pulling this up. So that was a 7-year.
Oh, it was only seven. Oh, I thought it was longer than that. All right, let me...
I didn't realize either how much Aaron Sorkin... So he wrote The American President.
Yes.
But it's directed by Rob Reiner.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, okay.
So
wait a minute. So do Rob Reiner and, like, Aaron Sorkin, are they buds?
I don't know. I haven't asked them. Rob and I are not close.
Because this is another where he wrote it and Rob Reiner directed.
Which is what? Oh, this one. You're right, yeah.
A Few Good Men and American President and... I don't remember.
Oh, Newsroom, Sorkin wrote, but it's not a Rob Reiner, I don't think.
Not Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner has had some classics, and he hasn't in a while, but, I mean, he has had some incredible, incredible films.
Like Princess Bride is the perfect movie.
It kind of is.
I just don't love that movie. I don't know why.
We don't Frozen.
I mean, I watch it.
It's
good. I know so many people that are like, this is like the best movie in the world. And I'm like, okay. It's super quotable. And I love it.
I just don't even know who you are anymore.
If it comes down between that or Hello, Dolly, I'm going to watch Hello, Dolly. Like, we're just going to put that out there. That's like when people go to The Princess Bride to feel good and like escape and just go somewhere comfortable and enjoyable. I do that with Hello, Dolly.
Okay.
But that's not even Streisand's best movie.
Well, we'll transit.
All these movies that we've talked about are kind of better than the one we saw.
All right. Let me transition in. I'm going to leave a lot of this in.
Somehow needs to set the tone of why he loves this movie.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome everyone. We're glad you could be here. We've already been talking, as you've heard, about these things. But this week we are talking about Rob Reiner's classic, fantastic film, The American President, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. And I am so glad to have together for the first time, Shelley McVie and Heather Johnson. Welcome, ladies. I'm so glad you could be here.
Great to be here.
Super excited to see you.
All right. Calm yourself, Heather. Calm yourself down.
I am excited. It was a new movie for me.
And it was a movie I did not really remember. I got it mixed up with Dave.
Those are very different films.
I know, but
those are very different films.
Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas, sort of the same person.
Well, you know, okay. We've talked a little bit about these things already. I would love to hear from you before we talk about the film. Who are some of your favorite, good or bad, presidents that you've seen on screen, TV, film, in the past, if you have any?
President Whitmore, obviously.
Yes.
If we're getting invaded, then I want Bill Pullman as my president. The end.
It is truly one of the great American or great speeches in film history. From Shelley, have you seen Independence Day? Come on,
yes.
That is.
I feel like actually though I might get like skewered for that to not say Harrison Ford in Air Force One. Like, I don't want to forget about him. Like that was prime Harrison Ford days. But I think I'd still want Bill Pullman. I think I'd still go with Whitmore.
The thing I like about Whitmore is that he's sort of a nice guy, and then he keeps pulling the trigger. Like he's Newcomb. It's like
I'm a combat pilot. I belong in the air. Oriented.
It's the sequel to that movie is so terrible, but there's a moment. Like, they even refer to the speech in the film. It's kind of funny. Like, the second movie talks about that speech as, like, this great moment in American history. And there's a moment where he's arguing with somebody else. And you can see that people stop on the street and start watching because he's going to do it again.
Here comes, quick.
And that's how bad this movie was. Because, of course, he doesn't do a speech, so... I gotta go with I believe it's President Bartlett in The West Wing. We were talking about The West Wing before. He is just Martin Sheen is so good as the president on that show. I absolutely love it. I'm not saying he's the best, but he is so memorable.
He is. I would put him in the top two because you sort of want him for your dad. You know, you feel safe with him. Principled, funny. Caring.
Yes, I agree. It's funny, I was looking it up. See, I'm not even sure I'm sold on the Harrison Ford as president. That movie's a lot of fun, but like he is Harrison Ford, and that's the only, like, he never stops being Harrison Ford.
Is it Harrison Ford as your president or Harrison Ford playing your president? So I feel like Is it because it's Harrison Ford? Well, I feel like, too, since we're in that kind of similar time frame of the 90s, I had to throw that in there.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm trying to think of other presidents. I clearly don't watch a lot of these movies.
I'm going with a movie that I just rewatched a couple of days ago. Dan Hedaya as Dick.
Oh, I've never seen that one. That's
Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Phillips, and they are Deep Throat. It's really hilarious.
Oh yeah, I've seen the poster. I've never seen that one. Yeah. And Dan Hedaya would be
Farrell
a great
as Woodward, and one of the kids in the hall as Carl Bernstein.
Really?
It's a very, very funny movie.
I do.
And he is great as Dick. I mean, Richard Nixon.
Oh, is that actually who he is? I didn't know that. You're like, as Dick. I'm like, well, that could be a...
Yes.
What do you mean by that? I'm like, I don't know what... I'm not familiar with the film. I don't know.
Oh, it's funny. Bunch of Canadians in it, too.
Well, there you go. So you know it's quality. You know it's quality, at least.
Exactly.
Dave is fun. It's a classic, like, the president needs the president goes into a coma and they find a body double to replace him while he's ill. And so Kevin Kline is playing the president and the nice guy who they just sort of bring in. And Sigourney Weaver. Yeah. It's a very sweet movie. It's cute.
Yeah.
You've got a thing for early 90s films. I'm looking that up. That's 1993.
You so know what?
I feel like Steve, that's just like, is that your... Is
that's
that your
kind time? Of my bread and butter. But
your time?
But you know what? In all honesty, there's a lot of president movies in that time. There are a lot of them in the 90s, in the Clinton era. And I'm not talking about like There are some now. Like, I mean, Vice just came out a couple of years ago, and it was all about. I mean, it was Bush and his. Who is his vice president? Who is
Cheney?
It was all about Cheney. But I mean,
that was a good movie.
Yeah. See, I missed that one, but I heard it was very good. They looked phenomenal. They looked great in the trailer that I saw.
It was very good.
But in truth, as you look through that, even Air Force One, you're looking at mid-90s. There's a lot of presidential films, and I think that's worth talking about in some ways with this one too. This one is the most blatant one. It's just called The American President and whatnot. But one more before we transition into that. Were either of you fans of 24? Because they had some great presidents on 24.
Was that with Kiefer Sutherland?
With Kiefer?
Never watched it.
Oh.
No, me neither.
Now, oh, my heart.
I don't have a very strong TV repertoire. Well, I have children.
This is a tough show. And it's very interesting because it started in the W years. And actually, the show started right after 9/11. And the second season, they actually had a nuke set off on U.S. soil. Or that was the whole story. They leaned into it. But it was a very different style of show. It was actually quite violent for prime time at the time. Like, it was a Fox show, not cable. And then by season 8, it was Obama. And so the show's tone changed dramatically. It was really, really interesting to see how it shifted. But season 5 is peak 24. And Gregory Itzen is Charles Logan, Vice President and President Charles Logan. And if you've never seen the show, then I cannot say. But I'm telling you, he is so good that I think he actually won an Emmy that year for his role. I can't even say, but he's not a good president. Let's put it that way. He's a great president to watch, but he's so frustrating. Like, he's not anything like the presidents we've been talking about. He's like the anti-president. It's bizarre.
And once again, the Canadian connection is there.
Kiefer. I gotta go show Kiefer. Toronto. But, okay, well, let's talk about The American President.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, sorry.
I have another favorite.
Yes.
Veep.
Oh, okay.
What's her name?
Julia. But she's not the president. Oh, she ends up being the president at one point, doesn't she? She ends up
being the president. Absolutely hysterically funny show.
Yes, that is a good one. That is a very good show. Yeah. You're right. It's kind of fun.
I like Daniel Day-Lewis as Abe Lincoln, too.
See, this would be interesting to look. See, this would be interesting to look at because, I think during Obama, it wasn't as interesting to make fun of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I just get that sense.
Hard to make fun of Abe, though.
Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't do comedy.
No, not well.
Not what he's known for.
Oh, man, I'd pay to see that. Not many people know that he was going to be in Happy Gilmore, but they went with Adam Sandler instead. But no.
That's funny.
No, Heather, that was a joke. I can see your face on Zoom.
I need a minute to figure that out. I was they were thinking, what?
Comedy very seriously, Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's not coffee time, so I'm not necessarily functioning all the way.
It's fair.
What was that other TV show with that president? With Kevin Spacey before that drama.
Can we talk about Kevin Spacey?
No, but I'm thinking, doesn't his wife or somebody, doesn't she?
Oh, House of Cards.
House of Cards.
In fact, Robin Wright, and we've been talking, Princess Bride, Robin Wright. See, I'm bringing it around.
All tied together.
All right.
Bring it back around.
Way to go, Heather.
I don't even watch half these things. I'm on it.
That was a fabulous show until I couldn't watch it anymore. And it was, and by that, for obvious reasons. But it was, the first couple of seasons.
It was an amazing show.
Yeah. But right now we are going to talk about The American President from 1995, celebrating his 25th anniversary this year. The American President was written by Aaron Sorkin and directed by Rob Reiner. And it stars Annette Bening and Michael Douglas as the American President, who falls in love with a lobbyist played by Annette Bening, which sparks a controversy as their relationship hits the public eye. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but the film is 25 years old, so to be fair, that's on you. But ladies, what did you think of The American President? You know what I learned before you answer this? I did not know this. He was not the first choice. Michael Douglas was not the first choice. This is true.
Kevin Kline.
No. Daniel no. Day-Lewis. No, I'm kidding. Robert Redford. It was supposed to be Robert Redford. And he. This is true. You can trust me on this one. This is real. I don't know if he'd signed on, but he was going to, because he said he wanted to do a romantic comedy. And then they felt that the film was too political, so he dropped out. And they went with Michael Douglas.
I thought it was a very sweet, middle of the road, don't totally believe it movie. Well, I enjoyed it. Harsh. I enjoyed it.
You mean you didn't believe that the president just wanted to go out on a date with a lobbyist? Are you kidding? That's so realistic.
No, I didn't believe the whole plot.
Okay.
I like political movies to be political. I would have liked more interaction with him and Richard Dreyfuss.
Fair.
I think everybody needs a little more Richard Dreyfuss in their life. I'm not going to argue with that.
Another Canadian.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
I feel outnumbered right now.
That's okay. It's in reality, you're not.
It's true. Heather, all you have to do is make a speech at the end and everything will be fine. It's good.
I'll make a speech at the end and just say, I am Heather Johnson and this is the Screen Fish Podcast.
I am American.
I am American. With the Canadians.
Heather, what did you think?
The least serious recording, Steve, I think I've ever done with you. Just putting that out there.
That's okay. We'll get that. There.
No, I think it was good. So this, it's not, I remember like kind of seeing trailers for it and stuff when I was much younger when it came out. Just to throw that plug in there at Steve. It was good. I think I loved the script. I mean, it was fun. It was kind of lighthearted. I thought the chemistry across the cast was really good. I think to Shelley's point, there's, you know, you've always got to kind of put aside that reality, that expectation mm-hmm. of this would actually happen. Whereas I don't want to watch anything political right now. This was a good diversion for me. And I, you know, so I can appreciate that. I didn't know I was going to enjoy Michael Douglas so much. Annette Bening is not one of my favorites, but she was very charming in this movie. And of course, then his daughter Lucy, and the first thing I yell out is, it's the icebox from Little Giants. So it was like a classic 90s cast, which was fun, because I'm like, I know all these people. I've seen them in so many movies, you know, from your supporting to your leading actors and actresses. So it was cute. There was, I think there was a, it was pretty balanced. I'm not like raving about it, I realize, but and it might just be because it's just a little bit of a different, it was less romantic comedy, I think, but not super political. I don't really know what it would classify as for me. And maybe that's why I'm still kind of a little, but it was fun. It was totally fun.
Yeah, see, that's why I like it. There are so many things I think the film has going for it that, like, this is, it is literally, I think I said to you, it's like a shot of a rainbow right into your bloodstream. Like, it's just, even the darkest spots seem rosy in some ways. And I don't mean that as a fault of the film, as in it's overly, you know, schmaltzy or whatever it is. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just think it's a fun movie. And, you know, Sorkin has done stuff that is funny, but is one of the few times, like, there's an element of whimsy and mythos to this one that gets me every time. Because it's such a romantic film, and I don't just mean the romance between the two of them. It's been a long time since I've seen anything with a romance towards the presidency. And I don't just mean that. I'm not talking Trump. I'm not talking anything. I'm talking about just generally in film or anything. This film opens with pieces of history slowly panning. It's like this nostalgia. It's classy. It's like watching, what was that show on PBS? Masterpiece Theater. You know, the way it opens with the slow pan during the title sequences and all this stuff. And it just, it's trying to look at the presidency in such a romantic way that it's almost jarring now. Like, it's been 25 years. This film's 25 years old, came out in 1995. And I'm not even talking about the last 4 years. I mean, it's certainly jarring for the last 4 years. But what even you just there are very few instances since then, arguably Obama, where the presidency has been held in such esteem. You know, they're talking about in this film that it's just fascinating to me. It's like we just did an episode on Moneyball, and we were talking about romance to baseball in film, and I feel like this does that for the presidency. There's something about it; it's almost sweeping. And I think that's what gets me about it. It sort of takes you away. Cause it's not like I'm huge looking for the best romantic comedies. But there's something sweet about this one that gets me.
I think it was an era where the presidency still was held as in high esteem. Had Clinton been impeached by then? Oh, I can't remember.
I'm looking it up now. I want to know, because I want to know when Monica was.
He was still on a pedestal, even when he was impeached. But yeah, there was a grandeur about the presidency. And I think in the last 4 years, we've become somewhat cynical, unfortunately. I think
he took the place in 1998.
Okay, so he was still...
Yeah,
so 98 into 99. So this would have been before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was, see, which is interesting because the whole debate about this is whether or not the woman should be staying at the house. And this is 3 years later is Monica, which is a whole other thing. but yeah. Clinton, I mean, certainly with Clinton, I think there was something about the Clinton years that I really think inspired so many presidential films. They were all different, very different visions of the president. Even Mars Attacks. I think Jack Nicholson is the president in Mars Attacks.
He is, and Natalie Portman is his daughter.
See, like, I mean, but I think that's that same era.
I know that president movie. I know Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks? They're
like presidents and aliens. When they're together, you have Heather's attention.
There it is. But see,
that's the magic formula.
That's the magic formula. But you know what? In all honesty, I think the thing about that era is after the wall fell, after Russia collapsed and the Cold War ended, I really think that they were looking for, like, who's the new bad guy? Because it's not Russia anymore. And so that, I think that's why there's so many alien movies in that era.
Aliens or your president? Who's the bad guy here?
Yeah, because that's right.
Mid-90s, there's a lot of both.
It's fair.
Well, 9/11 hadn't happened yet, so
no.
It was a dearth of plausible bad guys.
You know, exactly. And that's like that's what I think is so interesting. Heather, you were going to say something earlier, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say that your comment about kind of the romanticism behind this film and how it looks at the presidency, it just kind of got me thinking that this is kind of less of a movie about a president and more of a movie about a man who is the president. So, you know, because I feel like with like Air Force One, you know, to pull a similar time frame, it's about like the president and the plane, but we can talk about Glenn Close as the VP later because she's fantastic. Or, you know, so there was just something, there was a which is interesting because the whole point, I feel like, throughout The American President is character and who Andrew Shepherd is and his responses and the life that he lives and his conduct. And I feel like that plays into that romanticism element that you've brought up, in that this is less about the presidency in that role, but more about this person who fills this role. Mm. And which to me now maybe warrants a second watch on my part to put those two pieces together.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the end of the film, like, it seems like he's fighting being president the entire film. Until the end, when he says, "I am the American president," and he does, you know, puts an emphatic thing like, "This is who I am." This is a comparison that seems way out of left field, but hear me out. It reminds me of Spider-Man 2, and I mean like 2004. Yeah, I see Heather's face, like, and Shelley too. No, I'm serious, because the Spider-Man 2. Is all about whether or not he can choose between Mary Jane and being Spider-Man. And the whole film is about that. I'm not saying they're similar in tone. I'm just saying that the idea is there. And the very end of the film, basically he accepts the fact that he can get the girl and be the hero. And in some ways, I feel like this film mimics that idea, because the whole film is him saying, I think at one point they say, you know, oh, where is it? Do you ever think there'll be a time when you can stand in a room with me and not think of me as the president? She says, this isn't a state of mind. You are the president. And when I am in the room with you, oval or any other shape, I'm always going to be a lobbyist. You know, there's a reality there, but he doesn't seem to want to accept it in some ways. You know, I'm a man who wants to see her in a social sense. It's a really interesting dynamic. It's not that he doesn't want to be president. Like, he's not mad that he's president. But he sort of holds these two standards in conjunction with one another, in contrast to one another.
I thought he made a good point at I forget where in the movie, where he talks about the other first ladies and their china. And
the dish room.
The fact that they were not awkward because they had met and married the president before he was the president. And she was in this romance and he is already the president. And I thought, yeah, it would be different, because I'm sure, well, Melania is not a good choice, but Michelle. Hmm. Saw him as Barack and not as Mr. President.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely true.
Which I think then ties into that idea of what are we entitled to know about our public figures / celebrities, if we want to throw that in there. You know, when we look at the kind of awe of the president through the role, you also look into that mid-90s where things are more and more televised and information gets out quicker. And you've got cameras everywhere. So where presidents could have, like, private lives because they didn't have cameras on them 24/7, whereas you look at into the mid-90s and, you know, early 2000s, where, you know, you've got the Gulf War completely televised mm-hmm. for the most part, and you're getting these 24-hour news stations and things like that. So all of a sudden, the veil has been pulled back, and we're getting these snapshots into the lives of people who have literally had, like, Secret Service faces in front of you. So then it's like, well, what, and I think that was probably part of what Michael Douglas was maybe what he was pulling on as, you know, in this character as President Shepherd, is, well, what are you entitled to know about me to begin with? Like, he keeps saying, mm-hmm. I'm just a man, this is just a relationship, the American people don't care. Just kidding, the American people totally cared and felt like they should know these things. So then, well, why? What makes anybody entitled to know that type of information, or where a man or woman's heart is just because they're in a spotlight? Like, what makes people think mm-hmm. that's open information?
Yeah, well, what sort of expectations do we are healthy for us to have in those situations? Like, it's interesting because we sort of swing the pendulum back and forth. Like, in some ways we like knowing the nice things, but we don't like knowing the messy things. Mm-hmm. And now cancel culture has taken it to a whole new level. You know, of course, you know, without getting too much into the political situation right now, though, we have a president whose entire personal life is on display, and it's a crazy disaster in so many ways. And it's so, in that sense, the film like this can be so jarring because, you know, the only issue is that there are two single adults and, they enjoy going on dates together and she spent the night. It's so, yeah, I don't know what privacy, what expectations we should even have for our leaders or for anyone. I mean, Twitter has taken the barrier down. I say Twitter because I know there's so many other things like Instagram and all that stuff. I think Twitter was the first one to really tear down the barrier between celebrity and average person. I think it was Kutcher that popularized Twitter back, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was. Because now we know everything all the time, or it seemed to.
Yeah, there's almost like there's a false sense of relationship and a false sense of connection that, you know, because I can see these people like post in real time and they're putting pictures up there and I see it. Therefore, I have been invited into some sort of relationship when in actuality that doesn't really exist. And therefore, I am entitled to expect a certain amount of transparency. And that's just, you know, kind of just the nature. I was thinking about that actually the other day in the sense of I remember growing up, and it's like our presidents weren't allowed to have cell phones when cell phones came out because of national security risks and things like that. Mm. And now, you know, our entire political arena is online. And at any given point, you could see what any leader is thinking or doing or contemplating or understanding or misunderstanding, you know, however, whatever it is that they're posting. Whereas just, you know, I really feel like just like even with Obama, he didn't even have a cell phone, or at least it wasn't like publicized before, you know, it was just, this I feel like too, in our current state is still very new as far as the accessibility that the American people have had to their leadership. Look at me. I didn't know I had a political side to me, but evidently it's in there. Evidently there's something in there because I'm getting all worked up in my head. But it's a fair question in the sense of, well, if it's voluntarily put out there, shouldn't I be able to demand more? Or do I have the right to even be like, well, I don't like what you're putting out there, take it back. So I think it's a messy, blurry line, personally. I don't know what that has to do with our movie. I just went on a little.
No, I think it's a great question because in all honesty, what expectations should we have? Like, Canadian American, whatever. I mean, this film is all about an American president, but I mean, Shelley, like, there are things we find out about the prime minister where we go, oh, that happened 30 years ago? I don't like that either. You know, does that determine the man he is now? Does that matter?
I find in Canada, could be because we're not, you know, the U.S., we're not the top of the heap. I think most people in Canada wouldn't have a hot clue what his wife looks like. I mean, she has been in the news recently, but most people wouldn't know what his kids look like or what their names were. We just don't care. Or most of us don't. I don't mean that in a not caring, like I'd feel sad if anything happened to them, but I don't think it's as big here.
Well, I think Canada has...
It's not as exciting?
Yeah, I think Canada's relationship with its prime minister is different than it is with its president, because I feel like with the prime minister gets in, we all just say, okay, just don't screw it up for the next few years. And we move on with our lives, you know? We look for the... But, like, with...
And it's
not held in the...
for us to get rid of them.
That's very true. That is very true.
In the parliamentary system.
Yeah, we don't have that 4-year limit that you guys have. I mean, but in all seriousness, like, it's not like the prime minister's office is held in the same mythology as the presidency, you know? And even now you hear about the president being the most powerful man in the world. You know, that's the title. That's like the byline of every president.
It's on the business card.
It's on the business card. We don't have that here. Our prime minister is like just that guy. Yeah. We run into him in
like
Tim Hortons.
I
need
to go take some political science and like anthropology and sociology classes now to figure out why that is. You know, because we share a border. What is it about just on the other side of Niagara Falls? What changes? You know, why? What is it about? You know, is it? I'm just curious as to why. Yeah, I mean, how many movies, how many Canadian films are like centered around your prime minister?
I don't think there's one. I couldn't name one.
How many just in the 90s did we see about American presidents?
It's true. Well, Canadian Bacon by Michael Moore in the 90s might be one that blurs those. That might be the study point right there. But no, I mean, you're absolutely right. But there's something about the American mythos from outside that we see. And I mean, you can answer to this too, speak to this too. Like, there's no Canadian dream. People don't speak of the Canadian dream, the American dream, this idea of pull yourself up by your bootstraps and anything can happen. And that's sort of embedded within the American ideology from what we've seen outside. And maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
I don't have an answer.
That's fair. You're the expert.
You're
representing all of America, you know.
I am representing all of America right now.
350 million people are looking to you.
Yes.
Okay, well, let me give you one piece of it. No, we won't go there.
10 million people or 30 million people are looking to us. But
We have that many viewers, like listeners? Like, really? Wow.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, they all listen.
Everyone in Canada.
No, well, and maybe that's kind of what it is then. Like, you know, this idea of, you know, growing up, we're told anybody can be president. You know, if you want to grow up to be president one day, you work towards that goal and you can work to be president. So I guess maybe there's an element of hubris to it in that it can be accessible to anybody, but it's still based on that mindset of, you know, working hard and not like, you know, taking no for an answer or learning and, you know, standing up, you know, getting attention and things like that. It's still this idea of you have to work your way up to become the president, but you know, it's never off the table, so to speak. I feel like when we were growing up, and maybe that's something to do with it. I mean, that there is a level of averageness that anybody could eventually be in this role. It's not like, you know, a monarchy where you have to be born into it or something like that.
You know we're not a monarchy, right?
I know. I'm talking. I'm just comparing where, like, you know, president,
right.
Whereas I can't go be Queen of England.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
that's fair.
I can't
fair.
Grow up one day to be the Queen of England because I want to be.
That's fair.
I did not do well in like government and civics classes or world histories or stuff.
But you took Canadian history.
I do know Canadians do not have a monarchy.
Okay.
Well, we do actually.
Well.
Constitutional monarchy.
All right.
See, you're just messing with me.
No, I'm not messing with you. We don't sing God Save the Queen.
Yes, we do.
Shelley.
Steve is not an authentic Canadian. Clearly, he needs to brush up on his Canadian name.
Here I am talking about America, and I can't talk about Canadian politics.
We have a governor general who's the Queen's representative in Canada.
Yeah, I guess we do, but...
So we should have had a lesson from Shelley before we got started.
Should have.
Explain it. And then
we don't make movies about the American...
There it is.
We
that's fair.
We don't make movies about our prime ministers because they would be boring.
It'd be
except
terrible
for maybe
movies.
McDonald.
Love his hamburgers. It's great.
That was a different McDonald.
Different McDonald. I'm sorry.
That's just how uninterested Steve is as a Canadian in the government and
it's true.
Who has been in that office. Whereas, you know, we grow up having to memorize all of the presidents.
Yeah.
Like, we had to do that in chronological order in elementary school.
We did not. I took Canadian history. We all had to take Canadian history, and we all kept sleeping through it and waiting until we got to the American history, frankly. Back to the leaders here.
I took Canadian literature, so there you go.
That would be interesting.
So, and Handmaiden's Tale is starting to sound like it could become reality.
Let's not go down there.
Y'all got a guest room? Do you have a guest house?
Up here?
Would you even let us in at this point? Will Canada let any Americans in? I'm just not sure.
Not during the pandemic. Sorry.
You're closing your borders?
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
I know. Still closed.
And the majority of Canadians want them to stay that way. Actually, it's one of the few things we agree on. Bring the family. Come on up. We got space.
Hop in my car.
We have the world's largest landmass and 30 million people. So we got plenty of space. We're good. Mm-hmm. Going back to our leaders here for a minute, the idea of talking about the American president. Heather, you had an interesting question before, and I think it's worth talking about. Because we know that this film they keep talking about is a character debate, but when it comes to our leadership, I was wondering what you think and how you think it plays out in the film. What is more important, character or policy? And this, I think, could be split down national lines. I'm very intrigued to see how this goes. Which do you think is more important?
I need a moment to formulate my answer.
It was your question.
I know it was my question. but I still need to. It's a question because I'm working through it. Okay,
it's fair.
Okay,
it's fair.
Because I don't know if you can necessarily separate the two. Because I feel like policy comes out of character. You know, the character you have is going to influence the policy that you're working towards and the policies that you support. But. It's hard, and I think it's the reason it's such a hard question for me is because of the visibility and what we've talked about and the visibility and the access we have to leadership. At this point, for me, and this is the most political I'll ever get out there, is to me, character is becoming more important than policy. And the reason I say that is because if character is, you know, in line with certain belief systems or just what, not even belief systems, but like expectations of what good leadership looks like, then the policy to me almost doesn't matter as much because people will be living into character. And this is kind of a really messy answer, but like one of my things is, you know, legislation wouldn't be as important if people were caring for people. Like, you could have rules and laws back here. You could have policies being made. But if you've got, and that's well and good, but the relationships we have in our communities, that is what's going to make a bigger impact in those policies sitting on Capitol Hill. And people, I feel like, the way I see it, if you're willing to align to a character that is not very awesome because you align to a policy, I think you're losing sight of what's important. And part of that is scriptural for me, in that a good tree will bear fruit. And you see, you know, people, you know, we don't necessarily know what our leadership's intentions are or where their hearts are, but what they're bearing to us, what that fruit is a reflection. And I feel like character, especially in a world where your character can be totally fake too, though. I mean, that's something to think about. You can put whatever you want on the internet. You can be any person you want to be. So even then, obviously it's not foolproof. But I think I'm leaning more towards character because it's the person, and a lot of this is the way the figurehead works of the president, presidency, you know, in a formal setting, is as the spokesperson and as that figurehead, if character is questionable, that reflects and people latch onto that in good and bad ways. Yeah. I don't know if that made sense.
No, it makes total sense. I think that's great.
Okay, good.
Shelley, what do you think?
I'm still working it out in my head.
That's fair.
I'm going to agree with Heather. Out of our character flows our actions. You can be a good character but have crappy views, though. I think that. Viewpoints that are not well thought through. But hopefully if you're a person of good character and somebody comes and discusses with you why your views are not valid or need to be changed a bit. If you're a person of character, you're open to advice and wisdom. Whereas if you're not, then you're in it for some other reason, be it money or fame or power. And then out of your bad character possibly will flow bad policies. But I think policy is important too, and laws. Black people wouldn't have any civil rights if laws had not been enacted. So I think that's important too. But yeah, I agree with Heather that character, yeah, I mean, the good tree will bear good fruit.
Yeah, I agree with you both on that. My question would be, what does it mean to have good character then? Because people are flawed. And I think our expectations of people don't match their abilities. I think the expectation of the American president in this film, the interesting thing is it's not really even a character flaw. Like, he's not doing anything. He's not sleeping around on his wife, and it comes out. His wife has died years earlier, and he begins kind of a traditional adult relationship, like, quite frankly. I understand, you know, she's sleeping over and whatnot, and that's one of the issues for a lot of the people there. I almost yearned for the time when that was the issue. But, you know, as I was watching it, I thought, this really, I don't understand why this is a character debate. But I would argue that in any case of people that are high profile, our expectations of character have to take into account that these are people who are flawed. And we have lost the ability to do that as a broader culture. I'm not talking about people that are endorsing toxic ideas, like people who are actually, you know, endorsing toxic masculinity or, you know, white supremacy. Again, not trying to name any names in their tone, not anything like that. But I mean, people do things that are bad. They make mistakes. It's interesting that back in the day with Clinton, you know, we talked about Clinton earlier, and I'm not saying, hey, that's fine, but looking by any stretch, but eventually Clinton really owned up to what he was doing. And I know at the time that I believe that he was seeing Billy Graham privately. Like, Billy Graham was the president's pastor for many different pastors. Whether he didn't matter what the party was, he was gonna care for them. And I've heard stories about Clinton trying to figure out what he believed and own his mistakes. Now, I'm not saying don't take that as a endorsement or denial of Clinton. I'm just using him as an example of somebody who is a flawed person. As they all are. Obama was flawed. I think in some ways, Obama, who restored this honor to the presidency in a public life, I mean, he's a flawed guy, and I think he would tell you that. To me, that's character, is somebody who can say, I am not perfect. But I mean, the hard thing is that we seem to expect that they will be. So I don't know. I think when it comes down to character, that's what I would be looking for more than anything else. Not somebody that would be the model that my family and children will base their lives on, but somebody who is humble enough to see their flaws and you do that when enacting policy. And I think there's going to be sometimes I think policy, you're right. I love that you both said that, as policy extends out of character, because I think it does. But I think that for any person in leadership, you have to do things sometimes that you don't want to do. I think there are decisions that you don't want to make that you find yourself, especially at something that high level.
And I think we saw that where, you know, as far as like policy and character, because here is, you know, President Shepard as a man of good character, but was putting forth flawed policies. So for the sake of job retention, so to speak. So, you know, there's that element to it as well, in that you can, yeah, you can be a great person and get, you know, Shelley said this similar, you can get, be a great person and get behind some really not so great ideas. And you can have some great ideas, but is it because, you know, is it out of your character or is it out of, I know people like this idea and I'm going to roll with it. So I think it's messy because you can't always separate action from intent because you don't know it. I think one of my bigger questions kind of coming from that now is, do we accept or dismiss characteristics and behaviors in our leadership that we would not accept or dismiss in our own lives for ourselves? And that because so-and-so is acting this way, you know, we're going to let that person do it because of the power that they have or because of the way they can, you know, get to the ends of something that I want. But if it were like my brother down the hallway, I'd be like, you're acting like a jerk. So, you know, and I think that goes into that question of our expectations, but also what we accept and deny. So I think that's, you know, it's kind of interesting because of what Richard Dreyfuss's character, is he Rob, is that his name? Bob? I don't remember his
Bob.
Name. Bob. It's Bob. You know, the stuff Bob's calling out, he ain't exactly living up to. And that's what, you know, he says at the end, you know, Andrew says at the end of the speech is like, why you're accusing me of this? Well, why aren't you? You know, and people are like, he's calling out these values and traditions that he doesn't have and he doesn't care about you in those moments. But that's what Bob's character, you know, he's arguing for, saying, I represent these values, da 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 da. And Andy's like, sure you do. Not really. So it's also to what people want to hear and what they want to believe and what makes them feel good at night.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was an actual question or statement in there, but it just... this movie has got me thinking a lot, and especially as more as we've talked, and as somebody who stays very apolitical for the most part, just because of the circles that I'm in. And so I don't have many opportunities to kind of talk through these things, but it's kind of got me thinking more about, one, the pedestal that we put, you know, at least in the U.S., that we put onto our figureheads of state, like, why and how, and that's not healthy. So just kind of thinking through all of this and, you know, but that's one of the great things about this, about movie watching. Films do that. They, who would have thought a Rob Reiner, Aaron Sorkin, 1995 movie is now, well, I'm like, oh, that's fun. Now I'm like, well, wait a minute. there's a dynamic here that I need to figure out.
I think there, if there's one good thing that this isn't about movies, but this presidency, it's sort of opened up the Pandora's box where you're seeing a person that's very flawed and seeing some of the behind the scenes machinations and people speaking up. And we don't need to put people on pedestals because they don't actually deserve to be on pedestals.
But you see in a case like, again, you know, we're skewing here. I'm skewing here more into real world politics. But in a case like you're just talking about with the current president, with Trump, the thing that I think is one of the greatest problems with him, other, you know, maybe that's a grand overstatement, but one of the issues with him is he can't admit a flaw, at least publicly. He can't do it. You know, he's flawed. Like he can't admit it.
No, he's a narcissist, and they're never wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you're talking, Heather. You're talking about, you know, the presidency. I would even say celebrities in general. Like, yeah. I think cancel culture is shone a light on celebrity. You see celebrities deleting tweets from 20 years ago. Because they're afraid that they're going to lose their job because they're losing their job for something they said 20 years ago.
Yeah. We've swung the pendulum so far the other way that it's hard to find a balance.
We're in a really interesting space culturally here where I think we've romanticized the idea of celebrity or just being high profile, high visibility, to the point that we've become dissatisfied with it, and now we're trying to like cut everybody off at the knees. And you know, like it's almost jarring watching a film like this, because this is pre-social media. And that was, as I was watching it, that was one of the things going through my mind. And they even touch on it. They touch on the fact when he says, you know, if there was a television in the home of every man or every family 60 years ago, this country does not elect a man in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
That's Martin Sheen says that when they're playing pool. And it's actually almost prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where we're at now. That's where we're at now.
And I think it's interesting that movie, what, it came out in 95?
Yeah.
96. Pre-internet. 96, Princess Diana died.
Being chased by the Papo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that whole idea of making people into celebrities and hounding them. Yeah, it's not good.
It's, you know, when you talk about it being 25 years old, there are things about it that I wish were still true. Like, talk about this mythology of the film. Like, watching the film, the arguments were simpler. Now, I will say there are things about it that I think have not aged well. For example, I think it would be fascinating to write this story now, because I don't think that the relationship between the two of them, the way that the female characters in this film would have been utilized, would have been far, far different, I think. That was one thing I did notice. Like, she's almost in awe of him every time he's in the room, you know? She's a tough reporter, and as soon as he's almost, it reminded me about the Hallmark movies that we were watching when we did the Hallmark movies together. In some ways. She's just sort of, you know, she's sort of dazzled.
She was really quick. Like, yeah, she really, like, oscillated between fangirling and tough lobbyist. And I think that was one of the parts of it that I actually struggled with, was just how quickly she let it happen to herself. And that there was this, like, starstruck. And, like, before you know it, like, you know, a half hour later, it's like, I'm in love with you. And I'm like, would it really go that fast with the president? Like, is that really? Like, you feel that comfortable already? But, and that's movie magic for you. But I don't think that would play over well unless your protagonist is a female president.
Yeah.
So then we'll start there and work our way backwards into the plot.
But you see, that I think that even goes back to the idea of how much they idolize the presidency in this film. Because, you know, she's attracted to him as Andrew Shepherd, but there are moments in the film where she's just in awe of him as the president. Like, it's, you know, it's fascinating. I'm just saying that part hasn't aged well. But, yeah, I mean, the ideas behind character and respect are things that I almost wish were still true. Like, there is something about the film that is so ideologically pure that it really speaks to a simpler time in some ways. I'm nostalgic for the 90s, okay? I get it. You called me out.
You need some trapper keepers?
Some what?
Flat bracelets, trolls, you know. I probably have some of that.
Trolls.
Jean jackets are back, you know. Doc Martens.
Doc Martens.
Cargo pants.
Oof.
I was not cool enough for any of these things, just so that you know. My mom was like, you're going to Walmart to get your shoes. End of story.
This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate this has been great. I appreciate everything that you've had to say. This is wonderful. But we should wrap it up. Let's screen it or skip it. The American President, screen it or skip it.
Oh, what the heck? Screen it.
After a long pause, Hallie's like, all right, John.
No, it's okay. It's like watching Alan Sorkin get ready to do West Wing.
Yeah, it's true for a lot of them.
A prelude to West Wing.
I say screen it. It's lighthearted. It can make you think. It's a great cast. It's everything you love about 90s movies. I'm pretty sure it's probably on like Hulu or Netflix or somewhere. So definitely screen it.
Actually, I heard that there are actually free screenings on election night.
Yes, of this movie.
Of this movie. In celebration of the anniversary, it seemed appropriate, I guess. For me, it's a screen it. I get swept up in this film. I admit it. My old soft heart. There's something. I mean, the cast works. The dialogue works. The direction. Rob Reiner can, when Rob Reiner does something well, he does it well. I can't argue with it. So, I mean, for those who are yearning for a simpler time, sure. It's a lot of fun, and the writing is funny, and it's still funny. You know, they're coming down the steps, and he's talking about their first dates, and he's stepping into a presidential dinner, and how am I doing? Oh, it's pretty standard first date stuff. That's a good line. Anyway,
it's charming.
It's a charming film. It's a good way to describe it.
It's a good word, charming.
So, ladies, thank you so much. This has been fun. I appreciate it. And for you at home, a reminder that you can find us wherever podcasts are available, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, which I think is changing its name. We're going to have to look into that. But I know that Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, we're all in those spots. So please look for us there. If you go to the screenfish.net and go to the if you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, small group questions that you can discuss to get the conversation going. Hope you'll join us. We will be back next week, and I hope you'll join us then as well. Ladies, thank you so much again. Always love chatting with you both. So
Thank you,
Steve. It was wonderful. And I want to film with Heather again.
I don't know if we can make that happen. So we'll
see. Work on it, Steve.
Make it happen.
Plan.
We're going to start our own podcast without you, Steve.
Yeah, Barbara Streisand.
We're going to talk about Barbara Streisand all the time.
All the time.
You'll probably get more viewers.
There is a significant lack of musicals that get reviewed on a regular basis.
There's a significant lack of musicals.
No, there is a plethora of musicals. They don't have to be new.
Well, yeah, now that we're doing 25-year-old movies.
That's true.
Now that we're doing the 90s, like, it, just throw it all out the window. We have no standards. The 90s were a beautiful
decade. That's our tagline. It's our tagline now. Screenfish, we have no standards.
But we don't. You made me watch, like, the Cloverfield Netflix movie 4 years ago or something crazy like that.
What are you talking about? I didn't make you watch
that. Maybe Jacob made me watch.
I didn't make you watch a Cloverfield movie. Come on.
What do you mean?
Good night, ladies.
Bye, Brad.
Good night.
And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.